Understood.
Okay.
The volume's all the way up, so.
Good.
Okay. So, we're just going to start with a basic set of questions. How did you choose to come, how did you come to choose Pacific for your college education?
You want to really know?
Yes.
Yeah, from New York. At that time, New York State recognized only those colleges of optometry which were part of the university granting a bachelor's degree. This was 1949. So Columbia said, no, we're full. Ohio State said, well, we don't have room for anybody but us Ohio residents. And UC, California said the same thing. So Pacific was the only, was new then, you know. And so I applied to Pacific. My father-in-law, somehow or another, Jacob Javits, through him he got me a recommendation. Because Wayne Morse was the senator then, Javits knew Wayne Morse. And so I got back to Pacific saying, if you're a good boy for a year, and you do well, we may consider you for optometry college. And so my wife and I needed, because we wanted to get out of New York. So we just packed our bags, and on September 9th, yeah, I think it was 9th, it was right after Labor Day. We took off, 7-day trip. And we put in the Forest Grove, and we didn't know it, you know. We drove in, we passed the mortuary, and I'm asking, no, that wasn't it. We passed, Masonic home? No, that isn't. We finally passed the campus. And we got a room at the corner of the hotel, the Gink. I forget what corner it was. Just before you go down that curve that takes you out past Gaston or something. We got a log cabin there we rented for a while. And then we got an apartment. We didn't want to live on a campus apartment because we've lived in apartments all our life. And here we had a chance to rent a house. So we did on Douglas Street, 1632. Floor was $30 a month. And we stayed there. My son was born in 1950 at Jones Hospital, which is now a thriving community, I think. In fact, my first three kids were all born here. So, hey, this is a grand old house. But the toilet was out back. It got cold in the wintertime. Some people will never be able to potty train that way. So we told the landlady, who was a very nice old woman, I didn't remember her name, Rocket, that if she put in a really nice bathroom in the house, if you put plumbing in it, I'm going to be here for, you know, at least 4 more years. I have to stay here. Well, she wouldn't do that, so we moved. We found a little house on 18th Avenue, and we rented that. All the time I was going to school, you know, Pacific was really small then, and I forget how many were in my class. Well, actually, we started out with about 109 applicants, 49. We divided something into classes. And I drew this long straw. I was in the last group. Even though I had a bachelor's degree when I got here. And so, we were big city hicks in the town. We talked about, you know, we had things that we never even knew existed in New York. That lady came around and sold us eggs every week. Every year when she called her flock, we bought stewing hens. We rented a locker. I had a buck my first year here. So we didn't have medicine. My wife was in heaven. We froze stuff in the house on Douglas Street. Had a big plot of strawberry patch in back. Had a big strawberry patch, grabbed some apple tree, oil and cherries. So I'm being from New York, we were in heaven. My wife said, go out and get some cherries. Go out and get some, you know. And we loved it. And then we got this little house on 18th Avenue, which the landlord and his wife were right adjacent to the house. They were wonderful people. McCormick was their name. And I, you know, my three kids were all born here in Hillsboro. We were raised in there. We had a wonderful time. And I was enjoying Pacific. I got my bachelor's degree from New York University, which was, even though I was on one of the smaller campuses, which had about 4,000 students. Here we were in this little school, which while we were here, got down to 600 students total in the whole university. And I really wanted to stay in Oregon, but there was a guy on the state board, and I was a classmate, Bob Peters, who knew him, and he said, "Don't take the board, you're from New York, you'll never pass." So I took Arizona, Washington, California, and passed all three. And our kids were going to nursery school called Castle School, run by this family, God, I can't remember their names anymore. It's a big old house, had a slide in it, and they come around in a big old Chrysler Airflow and pick up the kids in the morning and bring them back in the afternoon. So they had a wonderful time. They were raised, we raised them really. And finally, when we decided to make a decision where to go, my wife said, "Nah, much as we want to stay in Oregon," she got tired of putting the slickers on and the boots on and taking them off every time they came in, every time they went out. And these people at Grand Castle School from Arizona, and I looked up the book and there were very few optometrists in Arizona. I said, "Oh, that sounds good." So Christmas of 54, I went down and went all over the state looking over. We decided to move to Arizona. So we moved to Phoenix in 55. I spent the year after graduation as a clinical assistant, graduate clinical assistant in the optometry clinic. I attended Bart Glass Club in Hillsborough at night. And then we moved to Arizona and opened an office there. And one of the Pacific alums was from New York, Marty Lehman. He came to Phoenix too and opened an office a year or two after I did. And I just practiced optometry in Arizona. Then we moved to California. And then we moved back to Arizona. And then went back to California and worked for a couple of years for one of the alumni here, Julie Kaufman, and his wife, Gail Hill. And then we moved back to Phoenix. Phoenix and went to Tucson. I did practice in Tucson. I practiced there. I was with an HMO, the first HMO, federally recognized HMO, Southern Arizona at that time. And I left to open a venture in California, which didn't work out. So I came back to Phoenix, to Tucson, and worked around for a couple of years. Then I had his answer to that and lost the journal of all places. Got a job as an ophthalmologist in the Palm Desert. And we stayed there, and then in 91, this is her 65th birthday, February 91, she was diagnosed with dementia. So I worked in Palm Desert and couldn't take care of her anymore. I put her in a Bork Betancourt care place. And then two of my children lived up in the Bay Area. And they found a place for her, nursing home. And they got me a little house to rent, 5 minutes away from the nursing home and 5 minutes away from my son. And one of my daughters lives in Alameda. So I was close to my kids. And that's the way it's been. I've been going there, bringing time and feeding her. So very pedestrian, nothing startling. Oh yeah, I was president of the Arizona Optometric Association back in the late 50s and early 60s. And then I was in the Army Reserve, retired in 1977. I wasn't there too much. We had a wonderful time up here, we loved it. As I say, we were big city hicks from New York, and to us, this was fabulous living.
Did you have any professors while you were an optometrist that really influenced you, that you remember?
Oh, influenced me?
Or that you remember and got along
sure.
with?
Sure.
What was the relationship?
Dr. Haynes, Dr. Marga, Dr. Pratt, Dr. I don't know, toward physiological optics. Nobody got along with him. He was a genius. He thought we were all geniuses, too. I say Margaret and Haynes were great influences. They were good teachers. And I was a year as a graduate assistant after I graduated in 54. And I learned more in our both sessions after clinics. You know, I was mentoring clinicians. In both sessions with Dr. Haynes, you know, and more out of that than some of the classes. So those two were the most interesting profs I had, were Haynes and Dr. Margaret. Both of them came from right after the war from Northern Illinois College of Optometry here. And Haynes was very young. I don't think he's, younger than most of the optometry students. We were all veterans. So, but they were the two. It was a very tight-knit group. We optometry students stuck together pretty much. Some of them were active, you know, what is it? What's that men's fraternity? Alpha Zeta? Yeah, when a couple of guys were there. And some of them rented a house together, communal. We used to go over there and study.
So was the attitude towards the optometry students positive, or kind of were you outcasts?
Oh, no. We weren't outcasts. We were positive. We were the first professional school the Pacific had. You know, they had taken over the charter of the old North Pacific College of Optometry after the war. And we felt, rightly or wrongly, that we should kind of more than support the university. We were the university, as far as we were concerned, optometry school. And it has become quite a school with a lot of graduates nationwide influences.
So now I understand that you were married and had kids and you lived off campus. Did you grow attachments, like great friendships? Did you go out and have fun with them?
Oh, yeah, we had some good friends, very good friends. Warren Ayers and his wife Carol were in my class. I found out recently that he's deceased. Jim Rashko is also a good friend. And I had some friends, not good friends, but we had some friends. Jerry Groff was here. And Philip Fingshine is going to be up here. A couple of guys from New York went back to New York, and I've never seen them since. But it's funny, you know, when I practiced in Palm Desert, I opened the practice at Palm Springs until I left the ophthalmologist. You know, there are a lot of winter visitors down there. I used to have at least one guy a year from my Pacific College of Optometry. Gilfrey, Jim Clonis, several fellows would drop in, you know. We were small, like I said, as I said, we were a small class, and we kind of stuck together.
Were you involved in any of the campus activities, dances, boxer tosses, anything?
Didn't have time. I was raising a family and going to school and studying. Some of the single guys did, I guess, but I didn't. We were too busy raising a family. We had some good times. We used to go out to Lee's Falls in the summertime and swim in this wonderful, you know, natural pool, freezing water from the mountains. Took the kids out there, they loved it. And I ran a paper out for the Oregonian in the afternoon and on weekends. And I sold shoes in Nordstrom's in the Strigley Shoe Store in Portland. A lot of us sold shoes on Saturdays in Portland. Many of us did work for Leeds, Bakers, I remember. And picked up an odd job here and there, anything for the Oregon buck. It was literally just a buck, because that was the pay, buck an hour.
Did you ever get a chance to go to the football games, or?
No. Not any of the sports, unfortunately. I didn't participate in very much. I don't think I had any of the
entire sports. I was just looking to see if I put it in this sack.
Did I?
Thanks so much. Bye-bye.
What was the being a community member as well as a student, what was the community relationship with the students on campus? Was it friendly, open?
I thought so, yes, yes. It was very friendly. People were very nice to the students.
Did you notice a lot of community activity involvement on campus, or did the two
not
ever
that I
combine?
Remember. No, not that I remember. Not like now, evidently.
Were the local merchants, the stores, really open to students or families?
Oh, sure. Red Cross Street, I don't know, I forget what's there now. A cab drove me in on the corner. The post office is on the corner. And the Tiptoe Inn is right next to it. And that was a campus hangout. I used to go over there, you know, it was like ice cream sundaes and stuff like that. And then there's London's department store on the corner there, and the furniture store, I remember. And the Safeway was on the same block. And Dr. Tierfelder delivered all the three of us. No, not our first one. But our other two children did. It was funny. I swear, he was always out of town. He didn't actually, he took care of my wife, but he didn't deliver her. He was out of town when both my he didn't deliver Lee either. First two kids, he didn't deliver any of them, although he took care of my wife. And I remember, Wednesday was Mother's Day. And you sit, he was deaf on women who gained too much weight, you know, and you sit in the waiting room and hear him holler at the girls. But he was a good doctor. We found out why. His father-in-law was the butcher at Safeway, and we were shopping here one day, and my wife commented on how, she didn't know what, how he did it, but he'd do something with her back. She knew I always had back trouble, and made her so good, and he started laughing. I said, didn't you know he was a doctor? Did an osteopathic before he went back to medical school? In fact, it was in Montana somewhere. It was such a trial getting to many miles away to a hospital, and he decided to go back to medical school. In fact, we had to start all over again. He was a good doctor. He was a tear filler. He liked him. He was good.
What was the diversity like on campus? Or was there any? Or around town?
We had the kids from Hawaii, mostly. I think they were just starting to dip their toe in the water with the Japanese. But except for the Hawaiian kids. I don't think there were any black students, guys.
How did the campus or the students and the faculty handle the racial diversity? Were there any problems, tensions, smooth transition?
You know, it's Western New York. Argument is a wonderful state. It's so much more open and free. We had a lot of Chinese American kids in our classes. Larry Chan is going to be there as one of them. Fred Chin. There was nothing. Absolutely none. Just everybody came into there.
Now, I know on campus they had chapel, and the Brighton Chapel was on campus. As optometry students, did you experience any kind of religious push or?
No.
No.
I'm Jewish. And the only thing we had up here was Dr. Berliner and her husband. And occasionally for some of the Jewish holidays, we meet with Dr. Berliner and some of the Jewish kids, mostly from New York. And that was all. I don't think any of the, I don't think any kids I knew really participated in church activities. It wasn't, there was no push for it. I don't know if there is now on the campus. There certainly wasn't then. Actually, my wife and I were amazed. Came from New York to this little town, 2,000 people, with 13 churches. And the poorest one was the Catholic Church, which is so different from New York. So we were just amazed. Now, on Douglas Street, we lived a couple of blocks. I don't know what the congregation was. We called them Holy Rollers because you could hear them on Sunday. But there was no push.
Was there a large Jewish population?
No. Just some students from New York. Oh, the guy that owned the furniture store. Oh, both the guy that owned the department store and the guy that owned the furniture store. The guy that owned the department store, I think he was in London. He lived in Portland. the folk that own the furniture store lived here in Price Grove. But the only Jewish population was some of the students from there, that's all. In fact, in our religion, when a male child 8 days after birth in a celebration, in the circumcision celebration. We had a rabbi that came out from Portland, and he was with the doctor in the doctor's office. We didn't do it regularly. And we had a hell of a time finding him. In fact, we didn't. We found some guys from New York. They weren't even Jewish. Invited them over anyhow. I went over and celebrated. So, but again, there was no real religious push for anybody, no matter what the denomination was concerned. The big kick we got, well, this is kind of diversity, not a diversity side. The only thing was the Hawaiian kids, they put on luau's, you know.
Was that well received?
Oh, yes. I had a classmate. Well, not a classmate. I forget what classmate. Mil Hayashi. And my wife and I went to Honolulu. He was in the seminars on vacation. I went to him to see him in his office. He was a Pacific graduate. I don't remember what class.
So,
we were mostly busy studying in our class and radios of us who had a reason for that.
So, what were
Some
of the dress like?
Pardon?
How did you guys dress?
Very informal.
What's something that you would normally wear to just a typical day at class?
It's a nice sports shirt.
Jeans?
Not me. I didn't have any jeans. I just had some of the kids did. Which is really funny because my daughter works for, and has worked for years for Levi's. Marketing, she's a manager or something like that. In fact, she headed up a division which they closed. It was wonderful for women was you could go into the company stores and get measured. And then gadget and everything measured. And in 3 weeks you got a pair of custom jeans. For no more than not very much more than regular custom jeans.
That'd be great.
Well, unfortunately, the company's having trouble and put back on a lot of departments. But that was one of my daughter's projects. She traveled all over the country teaching people in the stores how to do good marketing.
What would the women wear?
For men in those days, nothing. I don't know. I can't describe it.
Did they wear pants?
No, not very many. No, that wasn't the thing then. If they did, they were capris. I didn't even think they wore jeans. Don't forget, most, at least I'm talking about the autonomous days. Most of the women were just like the guys, you know, they were all veterans, and they were a little older than the average kid in class. And they had their families to raise them. So they tended to dress very informal, you know, nothing very formal.
So
the
dress between the undergraduates at Pacific was different versus...
No, not very much. No. Because all the wives were young. You know, I was 25 when I came out here. My wife was 24. And that was way with all the kids. We had some older guys who, like one we knew had been a school principal in Lubbock, Texas. Several others had been in education and everything, come back to school. They were a little older, but not much. Not much.
Would you classify your college experience, obviously it was academic, but would you, when looking back on it, would you classify it as social at all?
For me, on campus, no. We just didn't have time for social activities. Most of the social activities were like AZ, and some of the girls had their clubs and organizations. The But most of us, as far as I know, most of the married women didn't have time for that.
You said before that the optometry group kind of stuck together.
Yeah.
Would you say that there were cliques all over campus?
No, I don't think so. I don't think so. I keep watching my clock. There's something going on at noontime, but I can't remember what.
There's a lunch.
That's well. Yeah, lunch.
Yeah. And a couple of closing questions for you. Looking back on your short time here at Pacific, what would you say is your fondest memory?
The whole experience. For those of Shannon, my wife and I from New York, it was wonderful. Neither one of us liked being in New York. And this was a wonderful opportunity for us to get out of it. And we welcomed it. We loved it. Just a trip across country. And 49, four freeways and four big motels. We just loved it. You know, we'd stay in some, like, Iwatanas, and then rented out rooms in their house where they met them in New York. So my wife and I, it was a wonderful experience. You know, it was a part of our life that we never forgot. And we always alluded to. Really.
So what was one thing that you enjoyed most that you would like to see stay the same? Whether it's in the optometry department or in Forest Grove in general, or change that you didn't like?
I just think it's wonderful that the university's branched out into health sciences and created something that they can grow with, that they can live in the time when all the universities are having difficulties with funds and everything. And maybe Pacific is too, but I think it's wonderful that they diversified with the physical therapy and occupational therapy and profession, and the PAs, psychiatry. I just think it's wonderful what they did. It became like a miniature Oregon Health Service science organization. And it's a lot of small schools. I think it's wonderful what they did. And we have such fond memories that, you know, I came here 10 years ago for the 40th reunion, and I was determined to make this one, even though I knew it was going to be difficult for me. I wasn't going to miss it. Although it doesn't seem to be that there's going to be very many of my classmates here, from what I can tell. But I'll enjoy seeing you.
That concludes our interview. But I have, if you wanted to check on the list, you might recognize some of those names.
Oh, sure. Larry Chan, Jerry Groff. Oh, the optometrists.
Yeah.
Phil Fensheim, Myron Levine. He and I took our California, in fact, when we took California boards in LA, we stayed at his, I didn't know, we didn't stay there, but we went there. His father had a swimming pool, and it was hot in LA that time of year, and we went there. And really, that's all I remember. You know, the optometrist students. I saw John Jacobs, and as I told him, I don't remember your name, but I remember your face, even though he was not optometry. There were a few non-optometrists that I did get to know. I didn't know Bob Castile very well. He was fast-footed before. Larry Chan worked in what was then in China Clippers, a restaurant in Beaverton, right off the highway. If you're a Pacific student, you went there and he waited on your table. You got fed real well.